My name is Oleg Dogovich. I'm a farm advisor with the University of California. I work about 100 miles away from here in north, in the second largest strawberry production region in the United States. And, we're struggling with this historic drought in California. We're struggling to keep good water to sensitive crops. And, you know, being creative, we're looking at using recycled water, reclaimed, blended. The water is variable for your production, so you can start with good water, and suddenly you get switched to something with really poor quality. And additionally, our wells are getting salty because of the overpumping of groundwater. And we have saltwater intrusion. So, but we have this really expensive, valuable crop we're trying to maintain. If you look at the University of California guidelines, the threshold for EC is about 1 decimens per meter, beyond which you typically start seeing some kind of negative effect on yield or plant or productivity. And yet, if you look at our coastal plain soils, these plants are grown at EC associated 4 to 6 decimens per meter, and they're looking beautiful. In fact, I argue, these are probably the most productive plants in the world. So the question is, let's separate some of the salt effects and look at specific ions as well. And we wanted to do it in a kind of grower setting because a lot of previous work has been done in sand tanks, and we don't grow strawberries in sand tanks, with few exceptions. So we wanted to look at a couple of chlorides, sodium and calcium, and a couple of sulfates, potassium and sodium, and look at the concentrations ranging from zero distilled water to 5, 10, 15, and 20 as the levels of EC for each salt. So let me explain how it works for establishment period. The strawberries are planted through the plastic in a planting hole and irrigated overhead for about 4 to 5 weeks every 2 days or so. So each planting hole will receive about 250 milliliters of water plus or minus during each irrigation. So we're trying to mimic this exactly the same way as growers do it, but instead of their regular water, we'd apply either distilled water control or the solutions of those salts as you see here. So each time they irrigated, they receive exact amount of grams or milligrams, as you see in this table, of each of those salts in this RCBD-designed experiment with four applications. So that was the setup, trying to apply salts early to those plants where they're most sensitive. Their root system is just beginning to develop, so bare root transplants. They're just getting the first roots coming out of the old system, and so they're really, really sensitive to salt. So that was the ultimate test for us. And we had no rains, so not much leaching going on when there's no rain other than irrigation itself. First, we looked at summer berries. This is the kind of what we call off-cycle. They're planted typically in June, July, and they come from the freezer. They're characterized by obviously a lot of vigor and a lot of capacity to produce flowers and fruit early. But also they're dealing with what in summer production, fall production, we have high temperatures and high evapotranspiration rates. And so that was the first attempt in this scenario. So the first thing we looked at is, this is the EC of irrigation water, and this is bulk EC of soil. They behave differently in the soil a little bit. As concentrations go up in water, the sulfates, they increase in soil as well, but not as dramatically as chlorides, especially. I was sort of astonished by calcium chloride being sort of the worst-case scenario. And the 2 weeks later, the trend continued. We're reaching pretty high levels of calcium chloride in the root zone that was sampled and irrigated right in those planting holes. Now, I look back to sort of some difference between calcium and sodium chloride. And we typically work with sodium chloride as a classic salt, but with calcium chloride, we actually have a lot less solubility, so there's a potential for its accumulation in soil and in the root zone. And it's a really significant and important part for us because we have calcareous soils, we have calcium in water, so calcium chloride is a very realistic salt for us. We also have a slightly higher molar mass of chloride in the salt, so it looks like it could be potentially a more dangerous salt for us than sodium chloride, even though traditionally we know that sodium is bad and so is chloride. And the growers perceive calcium as a beneficial ion in their production systems. So the first thing we looked at is the plant size, a kind of an indication of, how the plants did. It was very dramatic. This is our distilled water control at zero EC. From that point on, they all are dropping in size with increase of EC. And let's look just first at sulfates first. Obviously, we're comparing two somewhat similar salts, potassium and sodium sulfate, just the first ion, the positive ion is changed. There's an effect of sodium. It didn't start too dramatic at low levels, but it really drops fast after this in plant size, which is biomass as well. Now, looking at the chlorides, a different story. Both very toxic and very dangerous. The plants immediately responded. Even at EC5, we have this a huge drop in plant size, especially as expected for calcium chloride being sort of a more accumulative and dangerous salt. And beyond 10, we didn't really see any plants alive. Why did we go all the way to 20? Because it's so different, I wanted to make sure we come to the sort of a lethal point to see at which EC for each salt will kill strawberries. I have a disclosure to make. I'm a weed scientist. I like to kill plants, so that's where it's coming from. Distilled water, they look fine. You know, they like distilled water, rainwater, clean water. Let's go for all the ECs in the visual format. This is EC5. You can guess which salt is which. If you don't, I'll give you a hint. This is calcium chloride, the fastest killer of strawberry plants, and the plant is done. Here's a more of a classic salt injury with marginal chlorosis and sodium chloride causing these classical symptoms. This is sodium sulfate, not looking too bad yet, and this is potassium sulfate. Plant looks fine. Hey, it's fertilizer. You get potassium and sulfur out of this. So EC10, this one's dead. Chlorides above dead. Sodium sulfate struggling pretty heavily, and there's some reduction in plant vigor in even potassium sulfate. We're going to 15, it gets more dramatic. We have dead plants here. This plant's probably on its way out too, and even potassium sulfate is severely stunted. Finally, we come to the final stop. All the plants are pretty much dead. There's one trifoliate trying to make it with not much success. So this, what's the value of this? We do experience sometimes fertilizer burn, as growers call it. It's a banded concentrated fertilizer area in the root zone, even with the sort of this beneficial salt, potassium sulfate. Sometimes it happens, we have these negative effects as well. So this was a story with the yield, not very much different from plant size. Biomass and size typically translate quite well into food production. And so from distilled water, even with potassium sulfate, we have within the margin of error in the C5 and then start dropping off. We pretty much lose all the yield instantly from the plants that have experienced any concentration of chlorides, both of them. And the sodium sulfate is somewhere in between intermediate position right here, but pretty dramatic drop as well. So we've got our winter berries. It's our main season. We plant them in October. We harvest them all the way from December till June or July. We looked at the short day variety. It's all different growth. It's gradual growth. Accumulate biomass first and produce berries later. And it's usually a cooler temperature in winter. It's a beautiful day like today. We're growing strawberries as we speak. The short day varieties like Benicia and such. And so this is our key production season. So I'll get the yield data right away. And you can see it's potassium sulfate was a good salt. It was beneficial at EC5. And it's a fertilizer that took advantage of extra potassium and sulfur, perhaps. But then as the concentration goes up, it gradually drops off. So it's a similar picture as summer berry, but not as dramatic. Things are on the decline, but not in the same rate and the same pattern. Here's again intermediate situation with sodium sulfate. And the chlorides, there were even some fruit at EC5. We lose about 40%, 50% of fruit at EC5, but as concentrations go up, chlorides eventually come down to zero. Now this is a visual of that. It's really hard to tell which one is which. In fact, potassium sulfate, EC5, and 10 look reasonably good. They almost look like a distilled water plants. And even the sodium sulfate, EC5, looks reasonably good too. Now we go for all the EC levels again. This is EC5. What was new to me is a little different kind of injury you get with calcium chloride as opposed to sodium chloride. It's not exactly just this typical marginal chlorosis that we have here, but it's those yellow blotches and discoloration on the leaves and decline of the plant. Here is EC10, calcium chloride's dead, sodium chloride's just above there too, severe symptoms right here. We see a bit of a symptomology in sodium sulfate, not much in potassium sulfate yet. Finally, we go to 15. There's a dead plant here, as expected. This one's pretty much dead. The leaves are still out, but even with sodium sulfate, we get this like a marginal chlorosis here and stunting. And even potassium sulfate is looking a little smaller. And at 20, chlorides are dead. There's a severe stunning in sulfate, and there's some effect too with potassium sulfate as well. So I wanted to sort of make some prediction power out of this work and first look in summer berries. There were some mistakes we made. We should have looked at lower concentrations of chlorides, because if we look at this linear model, they have not a very good fit, and the problem is they overestimate, this land overestimate productivity of those plants at concentrations of chlorides. There's no way you can get any kind of yield at an EC10 or above for chloride. So we should have looked at the incremental change from 0 to 5 for chlorides as opposed to 0 to 20, which is still okay for sulfates, but not for chlorides. We got a much better picture for fit for winter berries. And so you can see the better R-squared coefficients for the data. And this is what we expected. There's a potassium sulfate situation. And then this is the chloride and intermediate line for sodium sulfate. So this is a lot better way to look at it and predict, based on your analysis of all water and soil that growers starting to do now because they're worried about their very expensive crop. They can get an idea what's in their water, what's coming through, and what to expect with their yield as they face those common salts in their production systems. So that was a summary. I wanted to kind of educate growers and tell them about what's going on with those situations and how come they can grow strawberries in really high EC levels. A lot of times we have calcium sulfate, which we tried to include in the study, but it just was really hard to dissolve it to EC20 to match other treatments as well. But it's a common salt we experience as well. We saw that chlorides were specifically difficult to deal with, especially calcium chloride, which we do have. We saw that sodium was less harmful than chloride, but definitely not as safe as potassium, which is a fertilizer that we use. And at high concentrations, which is something that we experience as well, any salt can be dangerous and harmful. Summer planted berries, more susceptible. There are higher rates of evapotranspiration. It's warmer. Some of those varieties in summer are the most susceptible to salts, I think. And also because occasionally we have rains in the winter too, so that helps leach it out. In summer we never have rain, so that's out of the question as well. So this is some of the things that I kind of passed on to the industry as we move along. And I think I'm just going to stop here and hear any questions from you and comments.
All right.
Bring him on.
Take the first one. So on your first slide, you said the UC recommendation was for about 1. And then that picture, you said those plants were grown at 3 to
6, up to 6.
And so is that the ambient groundwater concentration?
No. That's we're talking about poor water solution.
Okay.
Yeah. And the same goes for soil. What we see in soils with EC 6 and 7, saturated paint extract, EC, but they're mostly of calcium sulfate. If you take an analysis of the soil, they have really high ECs, and they're scary, but it's mostly calcium sulfate, and it's like that first slide I showed in there, producing excellent plants. But it's changing. It's changing because we get this chloride from saltwater intrusion and from overpumping in the wells in chloride. So that's some people said, and we're seeing injury from those as well. Yes.
So you're sprinkling the plant
in? Yeah, we actually hand irrigated each plant, simulating the sprinkler, because you can do small plots with sprinklers. So we'll mix up a solution, which will be mimicking what overhead irrigation we're doing, and just hand water so every drop of the solution gets into the root zone. Exactly. Yeah. That's a total different story. Why do we irrigate with plastic? But that's how an established plant commercially with overhead irrigation. So the only water the plants receive is what gets into this planting hole from overhead for about 5 weeks. From that point on, they switch to drip irrigation, which is a separate story we can discuss because that's something we worked for several years as well, how to leach salts with drip bed as opposed to sprinklers. But sprinklers are still a standard practice that they use. Because plants are so vulnerable, they come out, and the hope is that if you can leach with overhead, pushing salt from top to bottom, moving past the root zone.
Plastic
on top, yeah.
I asked that because, there's a very different response when you sprinkle plants
Yeah.
So, yeah, so we need to talk about some of those sort of inclusion mechanisms are group-based, and so their response to soil salinity, and it's very crop-specific what the potential is for foliar absorption, but I don't know if strawberry has a high potential, but if it does, you know, that might explain why your calcium chloride salts are more toxic, because they need a greater capacity for foliar absorption.
That's an interesting point, interesting thing to measure probably too, if we take leaf biomass separately. Let's remember that we don't have hollow leaves initially. We're planning this bare root transplants without leaves. They're not plug plants or anything like this. There's no leaves until probably about third week.
Yeah.
And so they don't have much, you know, foliar surface to deal with in the beginning. And then as they develop, yeah, perhaps so. But when we watered by hand, I think some of it probably went on leaves too. Yeah, we did. Someone spilled on this. So it'd be interesting to separate if it is. And we did look at leaves, not just the symptoms, but almost you could see accumulation of the solution if it's been spilled on the leaves as it dries out, like a little coating of, especially I think, of calcium salts.
Well, that's why if you can do that
first
thing during the day, you want more particular salts to dry and concentrate chemicals through at night.
Yeah. They usually do it during the day when it's sunny, when the temperatures reach maximum. We also have the Santa Ana winds, that hot, dry winds that almost instantly trigger sprinkler irrigation because ETs go really high. That's
yeah.
It's like,
that's the worst condition of foliar absorption you have.
Yeah.
Well, could you take that presentation back to the slide where you had the four pictures?
Which?
Keep going back. Where you showed, you showed a difference in the symptomology between the sodium.
Oh, yeah, right here. No, this one. Yeah.
Yes. Right there.
It was your question. What? How is it different, or was it? It was kind of a new thing to me because I thought about salt injury being salt injury, and it's a little different.
I'm wondering, and this is just a hypothesis off the top of my head. I'm looking at the calcium chloride versus the sodium chloride, and because of the relative solubility of calcium chloride versus sodium chloride, I wonder if we're getting some the calcium. Almost too much calcium in there, which may be causing a magnesium insufficiency symptomology there. I don't know if you did a tissue sample or not to take a look at the magnesium and zinc levels in the leaf versus the other, but I'm just wondering if we're getting such a flush of calcium in that upper right soil profile that perhaps we're not inhibiting the uptake of magnesium or zinc. I don't know that.
Well, maybe that's a part of the picture, yeah.
I'm like, that's interesting.
That might be one of the things that's going on in parallel with other things as well. So it may be a combined effect. But, I looked historically at calcium injury and deficiency symptoms in strawberry. It doesn't look like a calcium toxicity or calcium deficiency, but, yeah, this thing may have interaction with other ions as well. Yeah, could be. The soil, I didn't mention, I'm sorry. It's a clay loam with about EC 0.7, organic matter about 1.3. It's one of the typical clay loam soils we have strawberries grown for. It's nothing. Organic matter is kind of low, maybe, but there's nothing particular about it that triggers, you know, differential response. Yes?
Yeah, to that point, for that particular treatment, just say for 5 decisions per meter, I mean, how many parts per million of calcium are we actually applying?
I could probably calculate that on the top of my head. Yeah, yeah.
Not typical that a grower would apply that much. And I have another question with regard to growers in your area. Because you said that, you overshot things, you could have, focused on from 1 to 5, instead of 5 and above.
For chlorides, yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't think I have I think about 20 to 30% of growers in my area experience in some of their ranches, in some part of their season, because the irrigation water supply changes for the season, conditions will have chlorides above 1. And I've seen that happen. I've seen injury from that as well. To give you an exact number would be kind of hard to do, but it's a common occurrence, especially this year. I've seen it 4, 5, 6, and 7 with chlorides and dead plants.
Okay.
Dead plants there, yeah.
And what's usually the makeup? More chlorides and sulfates?
Traditionally, we have mostly sulfates, but because we have chloride issues with brine water and salt water getting into the wells, we get more and more chlorides as opposed to other salts in the water in the last couple, 2 or 3 years. We've even seen crops not as sensitive as strawberry having chloride injury. So it's been kind of a recent development because of overpumping of groundwater and trying to maintain those bears with a lack of irrigation water available.
I have one last question. Do you think that you use 250 milliliters per application? So do you think that if you use maybe more water, you bump it up to 500, you would see a difference in your getting a little more leaching and that kind of thing going on?
Yeah, and traditionally we do recommend to apply leaching fraction for the amount of salt that you have. This is just to mimic what an average would happen to those plants. I mean, you could look at different scenarios. The other thing that came up on the salinity is usually you don't get just one salt, right? So you've got to have multiple salts in the mix. There's a little bit of sulfate, a little bit of chloride. So how do you account for the synergistic or antagonistic effect of those salts in the solution? It'd be a great study to do, but we just barely pulled this off.
Sure.
It would kill a lot of plants. This is all in the grower standard format field. I mean, they don't really like this kind of stuff. But that'd be, I think it'd be wonderful to do like a 25-75 ratio of free salts with, 33-33, different proportions of salt for different concentration for some of the 3 or 4 key salts. That'd be a really ideal study to finish off this work. Because that's what we see in reality. It's not just one salt. I don't want to do it for 15 minutes. Maybe somebody else can do it.
We'll put some more questions for our speaker. But the point, I think, is that the same thing you're seeing in Kansas is as the Ogallala is being pumped down, they're having to go deeper and deeper, and the quality of that water is going down. And there's a lot more sodium that's being applied to irrigation water. It sounds like maybe it's the same situation. You have to find the irrigation water instead of...
Yeah, and that's a decision. If you can't get access to good water, maybe you shouldn't farm a sensitive crop like strawberries, avocados, some of the flower species we have. They're all very sensitive. If you can't get good water, you're going to be putting a lot of money in the non-productive system you're going to have losses. And some of the folks walked away because they couldn't get a good water this year.
So another maybe take-home message is following some of the work we talked about, the ion ratios in the plants themselves, and looking at maybe
Yeah, there's a plant in Oxnard, the city of in the county that's one of the biggest ones. It has a plant like this, and it produces pretty much mineral-free water that you have to be blended back with a sort of a normal water to get to the levels of you get. But it sounds to me like it's pretty expensive, and facing the fact that you have no choice might be a good solution. But right now, farmers always hope there's going to be some magical good water come from somewhere. They're going to be okay. For the same thing, we can have desalination plants like they do in Baja. They irrigate strawberries with water, which is better than drinking water for people. It can be done if you're willing to absorb the costs. Or somebody will do it.
Any other questions or comments?
Yes, ma'am. We only looked at EC, bulk EC, and soil moisture in the root zone. We didn't look at anywhere beyond the experiment. We'll just plot it out and pretend it never happened. And so that the other experiment, something else went to there. So we didn't have a long-term commitment to this plot as far as, beyond the experimental time frame. So I'm sure it gradually would leach out because we didn't supply anything more. But no, we didn't. Too late. No, we won't. I mean, I'm sure we'll see curves of maybe different shapes slightly, but similar pattern in the tissue as well. I mean, you could see the decline and the symptomology. They probably show something very similar to what we've already seen here in biomass and plant yield. I mean, ultimately, I wanted to show the growers the plant yield and plant reduction, productivity reduction as something that gets their attention. But yeah, definitely plant tissue would be another one to corroborate these kind of findings with.